What's up, everybody? Welcome to Waking Up in Reno. I'm your host, Kyle Archuleta, here with the ever-present and magnificent Johnny Lyons.
Hello, Reno. How we doing?
All right. So we're really excited about our next guest here. I got to be honest with you. I am going to do my very best not to fangirl all over this dude because he is...
Too late.
He is one of my fucking idols.
Hey, what's that on my leg?
Yeah.
It's getting kind of wet in here.
It's okay, man. Don't worry. We keep it fresh in this little studio. Yeah, so ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the one, the only, drummer sublime, ladies and gentlemen, Bud Gaw.
Yeah, good beer.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
Wake up, Reno!
Wake the fuck up! So, we understand you are, we're popping your cherry here. This is the first podcast you've been on.
Very first podcast ever.
Awesome.
I've been in many radio booths, but this is the first time.
Yep.
I've actually been in this booth right here doing a Del Mar record years ago.
Yeah. So, to let our listeners know, we are in what was the old Granny's and then later turned into Sierra Sonics, so... Yeah. This building's actually pretty historic. Dr. Dre recorded his Chronic album here. Yeah. Ozzy Osbourne recorded here. Beach Boys recorded here. Fucking Bud Gaw recorded here.
Waking Up in Reno recorded
and
here.
And Waking Up in Reno recorded here. You're like, who's fucking Waking
Long up? List of degenerates.
Exactly, yeah.
Nice. Well, let's just jump in here, man. You know, I want to thank you. I really appreciate you coming in and doing this on short notice. We put this together pretty quickly, and I'm grateful, dude. You know, like I said, I'd fangirl a little bit, but Sublime, you know, how are you guys not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame already?
God, votes, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
Jesus.
You know, it's been 25 years.
You see the lineup that goes in there? It's like, how is Sublime not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man?
One of these days.
Yeah.
No Grammys, no Hall of Fame.
You know, so silly.
Redheaded stepchildren.
Oh, yeah. Man. You know what, though? But you wear that proudly, you know, because there's, I'll tell you, of all of our listeners, I would say 99.9% of our listeners absolutely love Sublime, you know, and for myself, you know, growing up in Reno here, you know, whether it was in high school or college parties, there was no, you couldn't go anywhere and not hear Sublime playing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Snapping bowls, hanging out, partying with your boys.
High school with anthem, your girls. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm a Southern California kid. I'm San Diego, but we were frequently up in OC. I mean, Sublime, you couldn't walk 5 minutes without hearing it on the radio, hearing someone playing it in their car. It was awesome, yeah.
It definitely brings me back. We made our home base out of Sandy Ghetto now. So we got our brewing companies down there, our management companies down there.
What's the brewing company?
Alesmith.
Alesmith.
Yeah,
oh, that's
partnered up with Alesmith.
Awesome. That's awesome, yeah.
That's Sublime Mexican Lager, right?
Sublime Mexican Lager by Alesmith.
It's good, too, it's good. Man. I've had it. It's delicious. Hearty. Yeah, it is hearty.
And refreshing, too. It's like, you know, I told him, it's like, I got to be able to drink this stuff warm. You know, it's like one of the that we all agreed on was, you know, the different kinds of beers, and we always had, like, you know, Tecates or you know, Dos Equis or Coronas in the cooler, you know, along with the other ones, but it was always Mexican beer, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, ice is a precious commodity when you're down there in Baja.
Yeah.
So you got to be able to drink it warm, you know. It's like, just send it to me warm. If it tastes good warm, it'll be fantastic cold. So I didn't even want to drink the cold beer. So
nice. Well, let's jump in here. Where did it all start, man? So as I understand it, you and Eric were homies back in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
And that was kind of like the antithesis of how Sublime got started.
That is. Eric rode up on his bicycle the day we were moving boxes into our new house, and he lived right across the alley from us. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're a new kid. Cool. All right, you got a bike? Let's go ride. You know, and so we just became instant friends. He was a couple years younger than me. And then... you know, later on that week, I kept on hearing these drums coming from across the alley. I was like, wow, you know, it's like, does your dad play drums? He's like, yeah, my dad's a jazz drummer. He teaches drums. And I was like, oh, cool. I was like, well, think you could show me a couple of things? And I already had my drum kit. I'd been playing in school and stuff. You know,
how old were you?
I was, at that point, I was 12 years old.
Okay, gotcha. It's like 7th grade, something like that.
And this is all back in Long Beach. You grew up in the Long Beach area?
I grew up in the Long Beach area, and then I moved when I was 13 to South Tahoe.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Went to South Lake Tahoe Intermediate School back then, before they called it the middle school.
Yeah.
We lived right up by the high school on Gardner Mountain, and our house backed up to the National Forest. And so I could hike over Gardner Mountain and be at Fallen Leaf Lake in, like, you know, 45 minutes
so
flat
awesome.
Back then.
Just
straight up and over, fishing pole in a backpack, limit out on trout in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, it's
just
so
like,
great.
Why would anyone want to live anywhere else but here, you know?
Yeah.
And mom worked at the casinos and had her own business during the day, so she was hardly ever around. Her and her boyfriend were like working like days and swing or graves, and so it was pretty much me and my brother and stepsister had the run of the house. And mom bought us all passes to Sierra, and I soon learned that I could just not go to school, hitchhike to the casinos, and catch the free shuttle out. And I'm skiing every day, and I think I missed like some 90-some-odd days.
Nice.
Education's overrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going straight downhill. So are my grades.
Yeah. That's another thing. But your skiing, right, was on point.
Oh, yeah.
So how does that transition? So you're in eighth grade. You're up in Tahoe. How do you get back to LBC and start what eventually became Sublime?
Yeah, well, I would live like 1 year with my mom, 1 year with my dad. So it was dad's turn, moved in behind Eric, and so we just started jamming.
Oh, you know, okay.
He played bass, or he played guitar a little bit in the beginning, and then we had this band called Helpless Conditions. We had a singer, a bass guitar, and drum set, and that was it.
Nice.
And we had like 4 songs. You know, all of our friends would come over after school, or we'd ditch school and have little parties there at the house while dad was at work. And yeah, so it's like, you know, all the time, Eric and I would just, you know, I'd see him for a year, we'd have a band, I'd leave for a year, I'd start another band where I was at, come back, Eric and I would jam in another band together. So it was just like on and off. And he's like, oh, hey, you got to meet these guys, you got to meet those guys. And, you know, finally, you know, he had jammed in a band with Brad, and we hooked back up again, and he's like, you got to meet this guy, Brad. He's like, this guy can play guitar. He's got a golden voice. You know what I mean? He's just, you just got to check it out, you know?
Yeah.
So he was actually in school at Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz, and came home for spring break, and we went and jammed in his dad's garage for that whole week, and we wrote like 10 songs.
Oh,
I mean,
awesome.
It was just like every day we were just there jamming. It was like a new song every day. A couple of them Brad had already, you know, had, you know, written like Date Rape and stuff like that.
Oh,
he had
wrote
in college, and so he's like, here, check this out. It goes like this. And then some of the other ones we just kind of freestyled. You know,
yeah.
We put on like a half pint record and kind of emulate that, you know, and change bass line just a little bit, you know, change the beat. And
so you immediately had chemistry. You guys got together and it was like that. You just knew right away.
Yeah. And it was something completely different, because all I'd ever really done was punk rock. And he's like, what's this reggae stuff, you know? So I thought Eric Clapton wrote I Shot the Sheriff, you know? The fuck is Bob?
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. So, that's crazy, man. So, you guys get together, you have instant chemistry, you start playing right away. And from what I understand, like, it was hard for you guys to break out, right? I mean,
like
clubs wouldn't book you, bars wouldn't book you, because they were like, you guys were a hybrid of, you know, of dub, of reggae, of punk rock. You guys were ska. I mean, you guys were across the board and really doing something that no one was doing.
Yeah, no one was doing it at the time. I mean, we'd send our demos up to club, you know, promoters and stuff like that. And they're like, what do you want us to do with this? We can't book you with anyone. And, you know, at the time, it's like, it's all hair metal bands. You know, if you didn't have 15 cans of Aquanet in your, you know, guitar case, you weren't fucking cool. So, you know, it was makeup, high heels, leather, and hairspray. And so...
And you weren't into that?
Rock ballad, butt rock, you know? Butt rock of love. Yeah,
pretty much the exact opposite of Sublime. Yeah.
Yeah. We show up, beer drinking, breath stinking, you know, surf trunks, flip-flops, and, you know, t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're ready to play. You guys need a dressing room? No, we're ready to play.
Nice. So how did you guys get out, you start playing, do I understand you guys started Skunk Records to kind of bring more validity to Sublime into your band, because people wouldn't book you? These booking agents wouldn't book you. So like, hey, listen, you guys put this record label together, Skunk Records, and then that kind of gave you a little bit more presence.
Is that how that worked? Well, since we couldn't get into the clubs, we'd just play parties, you know, and so we would go to the colleges and canvas like the fraternities and the sororities and stuff like so, you know, we were making trips like out to Isla Vista and you know, up there, Santa Barbara area. And you know, all the way up to San Luis Obispo and stuff like that. So we'd play house parties all the way up and back, and then, you know, do the fraternity sorority shows and such. And then so we're like, this is great, you know, we got to get on the road, you know, people are digging us all over, we got, they're calling us back, you know. And so we got the Maximum Rock and Roll put out this edition called Book Your Own Fucking Life. And it had like a list of all the clubs, addresses, promoters, names and phone numbers, and all this contact info. And so it was just like, got on the phone, started dialing. It was like, nope. So we were like, shit, you know, how can we do this? And it's like, well, who's your record label was the main question that they would ask, you know? It's like, well, you know, we're doing this on our own. Click.
No love.
Like, did you hear our disc? And I was like, so anyways, we all got together and we're smoking and joking, and it's like, well, we got to come up with our own label. You know, we got this disc, it's printed up, put a label on there. So Skunk Records came to be, you know, and that's how it was born. And immediately, I mean, it was like, hey, this is Michael Happold. I'm A&R for Skunk Records. I got one of our top artists, Sublime, is out on the road. They're going to be there, you know. Oh, yeah, no, we heard of you guys for sure. And it was like, just like, you know, it was the magic, you know, quotient that we needed to get there. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Nice.
So you guys were really grassroots when you started out. I mean, you were just beating the streets and playing every college town you could play, and really kind of grew a grassroots fan base, right?
I mean, yeah, we were just broke. I mean, we saved all of our money for our first demo, and then we met Michael Happel, who was a recording engineer student at Cal State Dominguez. And so for his final, he had to come up with a product, so he needed one song. And so he got in real good with the professor there, and he gave him the key, and he's like, okay, well, you're going to be out of here by 10 o'clock, right? You know, and so we would play all night long until like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, just before the cleanup crew got in there at 6, you know, so we had to get everything out of there, hide all the beer cans and, you know, in our cases and roll it out, you know, and so we were awesome. Doing the midnight sessions, and that's how 40 Ounce came along.
Oh, you're kidding me.
That's where it was recorded, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So you smuggled recording time.
For free.
You recorded 40 Ounces to Freedom for free. That is so awesome. That album's so fantastic, man. I'll tell you, that it's just, stands a test of time. You can put it in anywhere, any place, anytime, around anybody.
The odds are it's playing somewhere right now.
Oh, there's no doubt.
All over, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, not no doubt. But they're probably playing. Yeah.
Well, which is funny, right? Because, that was on Robin the Hood. Speaking of No Doubt, that you had, you had Gwen Stefani on there. Yeah, way before she was on The Voice.
Yeah.
And before Blake.
Well, we used to share bookings, you know. After we started booking clubs and stuff like that, we noticed it was like, you know, their fans were our fans. We go to No Doubt show, and it's like, I've seen all these guys out in our audience, And so it's like, hey, you know, you guys get a show, we'll open up for you. We get a show, you open up for us. And
kind of, so
you know, shared that way. And so it was real symbiotic there.
Yeah. So you guys, you put out 3 studio albums, right? 40 Ounces of Freedom, Robin the Hood, and then Sublime, right? When did you see the kind of the tipping point for the band? Was it Sublime?
That was when we really started getting, you know, more recognition and stuff, radio play. You know, it was like we'd send our disc to Rodney and Jed the Fish, and every once in a while Jed would play it for a local show. He'd play Date Rape like that, you know, but it was never, you know, it was just like, say there ain't no pay to play, but I guarantee you the day the ink dried on the contract with Gasoline Alley for the third Sublime album, our only major production, we got radio play. And they started spinning, you know, Date Rape, you know, 40 times a week.
Yeah.
It was just like magic, you know.
Such a great song. Yeah. Such a great song, man. God
gets it in the end.
Yeah, that's so good. So dirty. Oh yeah. So, you know, and it's obviously like a really bittersweet, because when that album came out, I mean, it was just a few months later before Brad passed away, right?
Yeah. We were scheduled to release the album in June, and he passed away in May.
Oh man.
And we were just getting ready to go out on our first European tour. We'd only toured the States and Mexico and a couple of shows in Canada. And so, we, you know, it was like, finally, everything we've been working for is all these things, you know, it's like, we knew we were the greatest band in the world. We just had to convince everybody else.
Right.
And so, you know, it's like when we were recording the album out there, and I remember flying out to Texas. We're going to record it at Pedernales, Willie Nelson's studio there. And Paul Leary, guitar player for the Butthole Surfers, was going to engineer the album. We fought so hard with the record label to get him to engineer. But the thing was, is they had just done their independent Worm Saloon album, and John Paul Jones, Led Zeppelin engineered their album, was their producer. And so it's like, this guy's sitting with legends and he picks that stuff up. Yeah.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. And Paul produced the Meat Puppets' Too High to Die. And that album is just, it hits, you know,
the bass,
everything is just crunchy and lovely, you know, it's so delicious. And so it's like, we want to work with him.
And you did it. You later did it, just to kind of transition real quick. You had another project, right, with the singer of the Meat Puppets, right? Singer guitar player, Kirkwood. Right? It was Eyes Adrift.
Eyes Adrift.
With Chris Novoselic, too, from Nirvana. Yeah, fucking crazy, man. Super band. Super group.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember flying out there, and it was like, literally, I was sitting next to Eric on the plane. It's like, what in the fuck are we going to do? I think we have like two, maybe three songs.
Oh, you're kidding me.
He's like, well, we'll do what we always do. We'll play music. And so we did. We woke up every morning and went in and tracked a new rhythm track. And then we come back later on in the afternoon and, you know, add some pieces to the one from the day before. And then it just like came along like magic. So we thought.
No, for sure. That's bananas. That's crazy. So you went into the studio really not having any material and just tracked everything out and just that creative flow and you put arguably one of the best Sublime albums out of all time.
You know, it's really interesting. Like the reggae and rocksteady communities, they do these things called version, right? And so it's like you'll have like one rhythm track, you know, that came from like a show tune back in the 30s that got Caribbeanized, you know, mm-hmm. and so that's like where the roots of rocksteady and reggae come from. And then they would, you know, being how broke they are over there, they couldn't afford to track new songs all the time, but they got all these great singers coming up from the streets, so these guys would chuck it over the same track, you know. And mm-hmm. so it's all these borrowed rhythms, and so it's really, you know, no big deal to, you know, borrow and sample and use it,
just borrowing it, that's all. Yeah.
So that's how we learned. And that's so anyway, some of these, it's like, where are all these ideas coming from, you know? And so Brad's gone, and you know, we're getting some radio play, and all of a sudden it's like our attorneys are like, oh, you guys, get in here right now. You know, getting scolded from Dad. You know? Like, get in here right now. You didn't tell me this was a Barrington Levy song. Oh, what's this crap? Why is Half Pint saying that this is his song? It's like, well, it's not really. It's just a version. You guys understand that?
No, that's great, man.
But the beautiful part about that was we really didn't mean any disrespect.
No, it
was
sure.
We were showing appreciation. You know, it was like our way of saying, gee, thanks for, you know, giving this wonderful music and expanding our minds. And they got it. The artist got it. But they were like, hey, that's my song. Where's my money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, hey, look, we apologize for this. Here's some dough for, you know, you're getting, you know, 50% publishing standard, whatever it is. And then here's a little bit of extra scratch. How about if me and Eric go in and record a fresh new track for you?
Oh, nice.
So then we got to jam in the studio mm-hmm. with legends.
Oh, that's
the people
so cool.
that we looked up to, and it was like the greatest gift after the fact.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
So we were in the studio with Tippa Irie, Breads and Pipe from Wailing Souls, Half Pint, Barrington Levy, HR from Bad Brains. You know, it was just like, we took those guys out on the road with the Long Beach Dub All-Stars, too.
Yeah.
That was some crazy times.
Yeah, was it really? Yeah. I remember you all came through the Reno Hilton.
Oh, yeah.
At one point. Uh-huh. Yeah. That was great. Yeah. So how did that come about? So let me back up real quick here. So you guys end up having like mass success with Sublime, right?
Right.
But unfortunately, again, you know, Brad's not here. So what happened to, I mean, so was the, did you transition then to playing these shows with Long Beach Dub All-Stars, or where did it go from there?
Well, you know,
did you stop playing?
We did actually stop playing for a while. The record label was like, okay, so tomorrow we're going to start having auditions for Brad's spot. And I was
Jesus.
Like, go fuck yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kindly go fuck yourself. Yeah, no, use this baseball bat and go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Because how can you replace mm-hmm. Bradley Nolan?
No, well,
it's impossible.
Our idea was, you know, it was the three of us. You know, it was the three of us. It was our community. It was our family. You know, we had Opie and Marshall and Jack and, you know, all these bros that we grew up on the street with, you mm-hmm. know. And so that was the sound, and that was it. It was the magic chemistry between us three on the stage at the time. You know, that was our time bomb. And So we were just like, no, we're not having it. And so we quit, and then we stopped playing, and then the attorneys came in and they said, well, you know, you guys can't just walk out of your contract. There's a thing called the right of first refusal. The record company has the right to your next project at the basic same rate, you know, without hiring a bunch of attorneys and, you know, making this an expensive process. So we read the contract, and it said that they had to pay and produce a product for us, for them to listen to. So we're getting free studio time. This is on them.
Seem to just work this into the deal.
Funny how that happens.
Time after time, man. I love it. God damn it.
Then all of a sudden, Eric and I are not seeing eye to eye anymore, you know? So we had to. They had to produce two albums because wanted to get Eric out individually and me out individually. And the whole time we were like, we're not going to hand these guys a Dub All Stars. This is for us, you know? This isn't for everyone else. This is for us. This is our, way of grieving and dealing with it, moving on, you know. So Eric and I had, you know, a punk rock band called the Juice Bros way back in the day.
Right.
And, it was sonic garbage. I mean, I would practice on trash cans and trash can lids for cymbals, you know, metal trash cans and such, and paint buckets. And it's just, three strings on the bass, four on the guitar, you know. Screaming through a paper bag, you know, over the microphone just to get raspy, raw, crunchy, garbage, right? So we recorded the Juice Bros in a real studio. Eric had to play under an alias. The Juice Bros was my project, right? And so we blanked out his face. You know, you could totally tell by the picture.
We actually
ended up putting it out on vinyl too, so that was a real treat. The Juice Bros actually got a professional recording, and Eric did this acoustic loungy type punk rock cover thing called The Friends of Jesus. And what that was is it was just a group of friends, and we'd show up at little pubs, you know. It was like barely standing room, you know, and these little one room little mini pubs, and just play some cool punk rock at a low volume.
Yeah,
kind of slow the speed down.
Sure.
And lounge it out a little, you know. Eric, the singer, different Eric, he had this Pope costume, and he would wear this Pope costume, and, you know, he's like, thank you, brother. You know? He's like, tips for God. Yeah, you must tithe. You must tithe. Do the beer tithe.
You know? That's great.
It was just a comedy act, and so we recorded that. And I mean, it would have been worth its weight in gold to be there with all these suits going, hey, here's the next thing from Sublime. Whoa, are you so excited? Push play. So it would have been class. They were like, oh, you're out of here. Done.
Yeah.
Done. See you, bye.
Nice. So from there, you guys transitioned, and you went out on the road for quite some time.
We did two albums.
Yeah, great albums, too, man. I mean, and then a tribute album as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fuck, that was so good, man.
Yeah.
Tribute album was fantastic.
Yeah, so we toured. We did two albums. We kind of waited a little while, you know, and then it was probably about a year or a year and a half after Brad passed when we picked up the Dubs. And like I said, that was just a group of friends, you know. Half of them weren't even real musicians. They just attitude, and, you know, you're going to learn it. You know, I'll show you a couple of things.
Nice.
You know, and show it evolved, you know.
How many people are on the road again now? I saw that, yeah. How many people are in that band? I mean, isn't there like 15 or something like that at one time? It's like a football team out there.
There was eight of us in the actual band, and then we would have, you know, guest singers along the way. At one time, we had HR, Half Pint, Barrington Levy, and Tippa Irie all on one bus together.
Oh, that's bananas.
And I mean, talk about alpha dog personalities. Yeah. You know, I'm the king of Jamaican music. No, man, I'm the king of Jamaican music. And I was like, oh.
How was it settled?
On stage.
Nice.
Perfect.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But it was surreal. Just a dream come true.
Yeah, that sounds like it. And then so from there, you guys transition. So let me look here. Oh, 2009. I hear rumblings. Sublime's going to play the Cantina Los Tres Hombres and Sparks.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. What are you talking about? How's Sublime going to play in Cantina? But you guys came and played played the Cantina Los Tres Hombres, right?
We now,
it was that with the that was with Rome, right?
With Rome, yeah. It was our first show as Sublime with Rome
here in Sparks, Nevada.
Yeah, but I think we didn't have the with Rome yet. We didn't have permission to use a name, so we just used it.
Yeah, forgiveness.
We borrowed it from ourselves.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So,
hey, what's that over there?
And you and I have talked, you know, at length about this before. But for you know our listeners who don't know, like you played with Sublime with Rome, but it was not your favorite project, right? I mean, would you mind telling me a little bit about how do you feel about all that?
Well, you know, it was what it was, but you know the thing is I was settled down. I waited to start my family. I knew that you know I wanted to have kids, but I didn't want to be an absentee parent. I couldn't be out on the road away from you know. It was hard enough being away from my girlfriends at the time.
Friends, yeah. Plural. Yeah.
Caught that too.
Tucson and one. You know, to be away from them for so long. But I mean, you can imagine being away from your Nuggets for that long too. It would kill me. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, I just wanted to be there. I wanted to enjoy those moments. And my daughter was just born. You know, Nicole was pregnant with Chloe, and Eric and manager Cheese approached me about this project, and I was just, nope, ain't gonna do it. Ain't happening. And so they courted me for months, you know, trying to get this
to
work.
Really?
And, you know, oh, it's not like the touring you used to remember. It's not like a bunch of cocaine and hookers in the backstage area. Gwen's bringing her family out, you know, and you know, they bring their kids, and, you know, it can be really cool and educational. You wake up in a new city, and you go to the zoo that day, and then you're in, you know, Chicago, and you go to the Museum of Art. You know, there's all these cool things and experiences you guys can, you know, it's a cultural experience. Yeah, yeah. That lasted about 2 months.
Yeah.
Then it was back to the cocaine and hookers. Wait, this ain't working, man.
Yeah.
You know, I need my own dressing room for the kids. I need my own bus for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
It was just rough, you know. And it seemed like in the beginning, it seemed like a good idea. You know, I think that I was more hearing what I wanted to hear, you know, and feeling what I wanted to feel.
Right.
Than the reality of things. And it was like, it just, you know, I was hoping that it would go there. It felt like the momentum was moving in that direction. And then it was like, eh. You know, it's like when you're like, fuck, that chick is so hot. You know, I just want to make out with her. And she's got, like, ass breath. You know,
like, oh, buddy. Probably the worst, right? The veil's removed. So that's rough, man. And I read somewhere that, you know, the first few months you really enjoyed getting out there and playing the old Sublime songs. And then there's just that feeling that like, hey, this doesn't feel right without Bradley there. Or what was the emotion there with that process?
Well, you know, at first it was like, you know, we never got to play hardly any of these songs live. You know, we had maybe played one or two songs kind of in their infantile stages. I remember that Brad was like even reading from, you know, a sheet of scratched lyrics, you know, trying to remember what the lyrics were for the songs that we just recorded. And so maybe one or two, three songs maximum from the self-titled album that we got to play. So it was like cathartic in a way to be able to go out and experience that with the crowd, with the fans, you know, for the first time. And without Brad. And so that's where like all the hype and the movement and the excitement was propelling me and my drive for it. So, but then it was just kind of turned into the circus again.
Yeah.
And it lost its luster for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard because half the fans dig it. Half the fans hated it. You know, they still show up because they want to see and support me and Eric playing,
but
they're like a little butthurt about, you know, just change the name.
Right.
You know?
The name's such a big thing.
You know, it's like if we would have done that and called it like Bum Lies or something like that, same letter, same font, just rearranged.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it probably would have worked. So
yeah, and so you guys put out that first album, and then you jumped off that tour. Like, I mean, what was it, 4 months? Like, the ride wasn't very long with those guys right after you recorded, right?
Yeah. So the deal was, I was contractually obligated, you know, like always, you know, I always get that hook in there, you know. Nothing's free. And so it was just like, you know, hey, I'm as soon as this album cycle's done, you know, you guys can go and record and do what you're doing, but I'm gonna do what I'm doing.
Yeah,
so, yeah, yeah. And it was kind of a It got a little testy, we'll say.
Did it really?
Yeah. There was some chicken chesting and you know, spitting in the faces while we're yelling at each other, you know, between me and the manager, you know.
Oh, okay.
And he just wouldn't let me talk to the guys alone, you know, because I couldn't stand him. And not that he's a bad guy.
The manager.
He's a very driven manager, but I didn't see him having the proper vision for where we needed to go. And
right.
So there was a lot of just button heads. And, you know, so anyways, it was, we were playing in Hawaii, and he loved to get up on stage and play the guitar solo for What I Got. But he would stink it up every night. And I'm like, come on, dude. It's like three notes, back and forth, back and forth. Learn your part and do it right, you know? It's like, finally I told Eric, I was like, we're not going to play that song anymore because he keeps on getting up here. So you got to tell him, your manager, you tell him that, you know, he's been fired. He's been promoted to manager. He's no longer in the band. And so... in Hawaii, he came up all defiantly, and, you know, I grabbed the mic, got off the drum set, and grabbed the microphone, and I was like, hey, Hawaii, what do you say? You know, me and Eric keep on playing this music for the rest of our lives up here? Yeah! All right, then you gotta do me this solid. Tell this fat piece of shit right here to get off my fucking stage. And he, like, looked at me like, oh, I can't believe you just said that! And I was like... Go home, cheese. Go home, cheese. And the whole crowd chimed in and started chanting. It was like the most beautiful thing. And then Rome started tinkling the strings and playing the intro to it. So I just, bam, not a mic drop, but a mic slam.
Yeah, nice.
Walked off. That was the last one. Well, technically the last one, but we had to do the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, tensions were hot that day.
Yeah, I bet they were. Yeah, that's awesome. Nice, man.
But I love that guy. Cheese, he's a good dude. He was well-driven. We just had different ideas on what needed to happen to make things roll. So, no offense.
No offense to Cheese. All right. Cool, man. So from there, you know, you and I first met through Mike Martinez. You had another project called Del Mar.
Right.
Which is a super cool, super cool project for the people out there that haven't heard it.
Fun little surf punk band.
Yeah. Yeah. Super good. And you even dropped some stuff about Reno in there. Was it the Reno Earthquake?
No, Reno's going to be Oceanside living here after the quake. I still go out there and drop half sticks of dynamite in the San Andreas Fault. Oh, shit. Did I say that on the air? Well, maybe. Yeah. It wasn't me.
Oh, nice. What a trip. So, Bud, what else do you got going on, man? So you have this lager, this Mexican lager. Now, are you in the flower game at all? I mean, obviously, you know, smoking herb and Sublime kind of go hand in hand. So I'd imagine.
Kinda do. Yeah. Smoke two joints.
Yeah.
So
what do you got going?
So, yeah, we're doing the Sublime Mexican Lager with Alesmith. And you can get that here in town at a number of places. There's like Kraft and you know, they have it at Ben's and Total Wine and stuff too. Some of the bars have it, you know, seasonally and whatnot. But
it's a great lager.
It is.
It's super good.
Kind of in the medium body, kind of in between like a you know a Bohemian or Negrodello and a regular Modelo. You know, so it's not a light beer. It's kind of a little amber color, but it's not hoppy. It's more malt forward.
Yeah.
And refreshing too. You know, it doesn't. You know, it's like it's hard to drink some of those dark beers on a hot day, you know,
you bet.
Especially when they're warm. So, but I tend to like that kind of stuff anyways. I like my beer kind of milky. So,
all right. Now, what about the grass?
The grass is always greener. So, you know, we're working together with a couple of different botanists and stuff, and we're going for our own strain. We're really into the medicinal side of things as well as the recreational side. We found that there is a real value to, you know, certain types of CBDs. They hit the same receptors that the opiate addicts, you know, need to fill. So does it cure it? No, but it's a hell of a lot better than getting strung out on some other drug that you're going to have to maintain your life,
absolutely.
Like Suboxone or Methadone. You know, those things, they ruin lives too,
yep.
you know?
Yep.
because you're still maintaining the addiction, which is not the drug, it's the mindset. Right. You know, and so if you have to do something every day,
healthy alternative.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, so that was what we're looking for. But we're also looking for something, you know, that on the recreational side that's flavorful, packs a punch, and deserves the brand name. So,
yeah, nice.
So yeah, we're working.
I'm sure
on
the
something.
Standards would be pretty damn high there.
Yeah, and I see me myself. I've kind of slacked off on that side of things. I don't really smoke and joke that much anymore. Basically, never. But you know, I told them, it's like, you guys, you know, get it down, narrow it down to like the best five, and you know, and then I'll give you my vote.
Yeah.
So. So otherwise, man, I'd be chong.
Yeah. So you probably wouldn't be here. No. But this interview would be much, much slower.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I like it. Nice, nice. So what else you got going? What else you got cracking?
So yeah, you know, we've always just tried to maintain the discography. You know, the record labels, they always want to cut things up and regurgitate the same old crap. Slap a new label on it and call it a new album. You know, it's like they'll take three songs from this album, four songs from that one, and oh yeah, it's the greatest hits. You know, it's like, psh, guys put a lot of thought into that. So trying to keep that down, we had always said, why don't we do a dub record? Because you know, that's the stuff that we dug. And they're like, absolutely not. It was like pulling teeth trying to get them to release vinyl. They couldn't understand. It's like, that's what they're spinning in the clubs. If we get the clubs to spin it, people will sample it.
You
it's going to keep the everything current. Yeah. Oh, but no. So, you know, we had to go and hold the mental midget's hands over there wearing the suits, you know, and kind of push his fingers.
What label is this?
It's a Universal. We've been passed around like a drunk party chick, you know. So we started with Gasoline Alley, then went to Geffen, Interscope, back to Geffen, and I don't even know where we're at now, but it's all under Universal.
So yeah, yeah.
MCA.
Do you foresee you putting out any more music anytime soon or in the coming years?
Yeah, yeah, right now we are working on our dub album.
Oh, you are? Okay.
So it's Mad Professor meets Dub Scientist in LBC.
Nice.
And so they've taken a couple of songs each, you know, four or five songs each, and just done just wicked dubs. I mean, it's nice. Like, it is so cool. I was trying to explain to a friend of mine, you know, what dub was and who these guys were. And it was like, well, it's kind of like, you know, psychedelic, you know, a lot of delay and sound effects and things like that. And then, you know, these guys are legends. It's like if you were a Beatles fan, having Paul McCartney, you know, engineer and produce your songs,
you
know. So, and these guys are just like, and just brilliant, you know, the toys that they use in the studio to get their sounds is just amazing.
Yeah. When should we expect that to be out?
That should be out hopefully this summer. We're hoping and crossing our fingers for maybe Record Store Day. But
yeah, that'd be great. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, and then let's see, we found some previously unreleased song parts, like snippets and, you know, unfinished kind of works in progress, and so we're going through those right now, seeing about taking those vocal tracks and the rough guitar tracks and then recording our drums and bass, me and Eric doing drum and bass over that, and
with Bradley playing
and
wow.
singing
wow.
and then adding, you know, other artists to come in and
oh
do
that would be so cool
and,
man,
you know, make it a new track. And one thing that happened recently, and I probably shouldn't say this too loudly, but that
it's only
band,
Reno.
Yeah, no one listens.
It's just waking up in Reno.
Yeah.
That I ran into those guys from Stick Figure, and
great band.
And, mm-hmm. and we had a blast. And they have taken one of our tracks and remixed it and did a really, really nice job on it. So you guys should be looking forward to that.
Nice.
We're hoping maybe Record Store Day for that one. They're gonna they're playing the Bayfest down in San Diego like May 30th, and so I'm gonna try to get down there and hop on the drums and play a couple songs.
Nice. What track is it?
It's called Feel Like That. It was the track originally was called Eileen, but Brad says Feel Like That a few times in it, and they dug that and went with it. So
nice.
It's a real good track. It's a real good track.
Well, I'll tell you, there wouldn't be Stick Figure, there wouldn't be Slightly Stupid, Dirty Heads, Pepper, anybody like that without Sublime, man. And dude, we're so grateful. Thank you for coming in here, bud. You know, we're about ready to wrap this up, but I know you're busy. You got a lot of stuff going on. But one thing that we do with all of our guests is we ask them, if you had 24 hours in Reno from sun up to sundown, how would you spend your time? Where would you go? Who would you go see? Are you ready, man? You ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
And go.
First thing I would do is I would wake up and I would roll my crusty ass down to Shays, swack about four
starting
pints.
Starting at Shays. I like it. I like your style.
True fucking rock star.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I'd have to go have some tacos and then head on down to the river, go wet my head for round two.
Back at Shays.
What's that one across the street? The speakeasy like one.
Death and Taxes.
Death and Taxes. Yeah. Okay, that's a great spot.
That's a great spot. Yeah.
Go get yourself a Manhattan there.
Oh yeah, they do it right.
Kick off the day right.
So what is this? 10 a.m. now or what?
just pushing about noon.
Okay, 1:30. All right,
lunchtime. Perfect.
Yeah. Now what?
Because it's winter time, I'm going to go up and hit the chutes at Mount Rose.
Nice.
Yeah. And then since we're already halfway to Tahoe, I'm taking the Jeep and we're going to the, because now it's summertime, so we're going to the Rubicon and we're going to go spend a week out there. So it's a week and a day on the Rubicon.
Nice.
It came in. What are you going to do in Reno into, it's a week.
A whole week,
and now we're up in Tahoe.
Now we're in Tahoe.
This is what happens when you hang out by God.
Hey,
you
know,
absolutely.
Reno, it's the biggest little city, but it's also a year-round town, too. Yeah, I mean, we got stuff going on all the time, you know, and that's what I love about it. It's like, people are like, Reno, what, like on purpose? It's like, You have no clue.
Let them stay in the dark, too. Exactly. Let them stay in the dark.
Don't come here, man. Exactly. Don't come here. This is our playground. Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, well, Bud, thank you, man. We really appreciate it. You've been a gracious guest, and it's always great seeing you. You're a good man, good friend. It was nice talking to you about your kids and how well they're doing in school and what have you, and you're a good father, dude.
Right on.
And I know that probably means more to you than most of the things out there and the accolades that you've got over time. So.
Definitely does. Thank you, Kyle. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for me.
Let's go. That's right. Bud just pulled out his phone. He's laying some shit down. Now, what's this?
This is the new track that we're going to do with Stick Figure.
Ooh, exclusive.
Exclusive drop. Dude, that's so dope, man. Thanks, bud.
That's awesome.
Appreciate you sharing that with everybody, bro.
Definitely.
Can't wait. Well, hey, man, you be cool. And once again, everybody, thanks for listening to Waking Up in Reno. Stoked to be here with the legendary drummer, Bud Gaw, and Johnny Lyons, as always. And John, where can people track us?
Absolutely. Thanks, Reno. As always, you can find us on Facebook.com/Waking Up in Reno or on Twitter @RenoPodcast, or you can follow us on Instagram @Waking Up in Reno.
All right, yo, be cool. We out.
Peace.